Welcome to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head-on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence. Here we are live in the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, and it's awesome to have you with us tonight. We are having some technical difficulties with our guest, but hopefully their internet's going to come back up. He just texted and said, hey, we're having issues here, so we're just going to keep on keeping on. And I want to welcome to the program tonight this special guest host, my son, Staff Sergeant Curtis Williams, and Curtis is going to be hopping in here, and I just got to see my beautiful granddaughter. She came sneaking in the room and waved, and that made my night. How's everything going in Seattle, son?
It's going. It's a lot different than Houston, Texas. The weather is surely different every single day. So,
well, it's cold here, but I got a feeling Seattle's a little different.
Oh, it's a little bit cold. I don't know what cold is in Texas anymore. It's cold, what, 70 degrees to Texans still?
Well, we've been experiencing in the 30s and 40s this mercy. Week. What's happening there?
It's mounting in the 20s and 30s here. No more snow, at least. Got a couple inches last couple weeks ago, but just living life. Not in the big city anymore, but I sure do miss my Texans.
There you go. I hear that. We've been getting a lot of comments from last week's show. Coach Michael Taylor, a great guest. And if you haven't listened to that yet, feel free to get on Facebook and archive that or get right on the bbsradio.com site and watch for that. And you can look at all the archives. I think Kurtz, we've been doing this for a couple of years.
Almost, yeah.
So we have all kinds of archive shows on there. Some of my favorites that I really like to – I've watched the Little Ricky interview a lot because I love Lucy. But next week I'm booking the guests now. But in 2 weeks from tonight, on our sleeves, personnel are going to be here, and I ran across them in a strange way by going through Big Lots and buying something and looking on the receipt, and it said interested in protecting our children from abuse, get on this site, and it was called On Our Sleeves, and Big Lots sponsors them, so does the Harlem Globetrotters and several other people, and I got on the site, and the resources on there are absolutely phenomenal. So after I printed off all the resources, read it, and thought, wow, I just wonder if they would. We're going to have the CEO, founder, and president of that organization, and a couple other of the executives with the organization. The whole gang will be here in 2 weeks from tonight on our sleeve. And it's a great, great free resource for teachers, people that deal with children daily, or grandparents and parents who just want to help talk to their kids about some of the stressful things that they're going through right now. I'm going to look here to see. I don't believe our guest has joined us yet. He is saying internet is back up now. So, okay, we're going to trust that that's going to happen. You're going to be seeing, and I know you've heard me say this for probably over a year and a half now, but while we're waiting for the guest, we're going to kind of just fill in the gaps a little bit about the book, When Dark Clouds Come, for the youth. is being edited right now. We're finishing it up. We're going to be sending it to print, and hopefully we can have it come out in the month of February is what I'm shooting for. And Curtis, what do you think about information that our younger generation need? And this book isn't just for teenagers. I'm trying to market it for teenagers, 20s and 30s, those young millennials, the people that are just getting out of high school and going into college, and how they deal with difficulty. And you being in the Army and in the past recruiting, what do you think some of the biggest challenges are that the kids are going through today, that age?
It's just having the ability and the trust to talk to somebody. I think that's always been a generational gap between anybody, really. It's just whenever you're brought up to be tough and not talk about your feelings, but just having those resources, having a book to say, hey, if you're feeling like this, it's okay. You're not alone. And that's, again, I think that's one of the biggest issues. It's just dealing with people's feelings and having them express them in the right way. That's the biggest thing, I think, is how to express your feelings in the correct way in this day and age.
And Curtis, here I am, the one writing the book, but did you have anybody like that when you were growing up?
Not really. Again, I was born a little bit different of an era, just not having that one person that I could just talk to about everything. I had good friends that talked about certain things, but every single aspect, oh no, couldn't have anybody like that.
Yeah, and this book's going to be coming out here shortly, and I'm really working on it hard, and hopefully it's going to, I think, really take off. And I wanted to focus on this one because I think this day and age, our younger generation, matter of fact, I start as my dedication to the book is to the younger generation, and my apologies that our generation have let them down. We've handed them a lot of baggage and said, here, fix it. Hope you make it all right. And hopefully this book will give them some help. We now have our guest tonight, and Commander Sergeant, if you would be so kind to Sergeant Major to unmute, and we will welcome you to the program. Saeed Mustafa is a Command Sergeant Major with the U.S. Army, and welcome to the program tonight. You're in Highland Falls, New York. Is that correct?
That is correct. That is correct, and thank you so much for welcoming me. I'm happy to be here this evening.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. The way I look at it, better late than never, and you look absolutely awesome. I had a choice in a plethora of pictures to use on our poster, and I want to let you know, Sergeant Major, that every one of them was like, this man is tough. I would not want to go up against you. But I tell you what, you are retired from the U.S. Army, and my son here, I want to introduce to you Staff Sergeant Curtis Williams, my son, my youngest.
Good to meet you, Sergeant Major.
Seattle. So welcome yourself, Curtis.
Good to meet you, Sergeant Major. I've heard some, a lot of good things about you, and I think we might have crossed paths at some point in our career because your picture looks awfully familiar to me. Your good old DA photo looks awfully familiar to me. So I think we might have crossed paths at some point in our career. So
very interesting, because you do look very familiar to me as well. And I didn't know that your dad was going to surprise me with a special treat.
Could that passing been in Germany?
I know possible in Germany. And I believe you're in Oklahoma at one point, possibly.
No, well, you know, so in the 30-year time frame, mm-hmm. I started out at Fort Lewis, Washington. And then I end up in Korea. From there, I end up I think I came to Georgia. I stayed in Georgia for a period of time. And then periodically deployed to Somalia, to Kuwait, to Egypt, Saudi Arabia. And then I got Fort Carson under my belt. I got Fort Lee, Virginia. I got Fort Bragg, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And, but never Oklahoma. But I did ride through there just so I could see it one time.
Hey, I hope you didn't make a big trip, because there's nothing in Oklahoma.
No.
It's flat. It's like northern Texas. There's nothing there.
You guys talk about Fort Sill so much. I had to see it with my own eyes.
Everybody has to see Fort Sill at least once in their career.
Yeah. Well, you are an author, and a darn good author, by the way. I've read your book completely, and I loved it. You're a public speaker. You was a keynote speaker for the Veterans in Pfizer and the Global Black Community's National Buffalo Soldiers Day 2021 celebration. And this book that I want everybody to write the name down, and I hope you have a hard copy of it so you can show us, Resilient Transition, was published on September 11th, 2021. And it's talking about stress and anxiety and how to deal with those feelings. And there it is. That's a softbound. You can actually get a hardbound, or you can buy the Kindle edition like I did and get it immediately. But any of those, and it looks like, because I watch those, are you like me? Let's be honest. Do you watch those Amazon numbers every day?
I did. I do. In the beginning I did, but they didn't move fast enough, so I stopped looking.
Well, I've had that my first book out for 3.5 years, and I still look at it every day, every day. But anyway, you're a combat veteran, a two-time bronze recipient, and you served in the Persian Gulf War, Somalia, and you did 2 tours in Operation Iraqi Freedom. And I want to let you know, it is an honor to have you on the program tonight, and I appreciate you taking the time. I hear through the grapevine that you're going to be coming to Houston. Is that correct?
Yes, actually, next week I'm going to fly to Houston, and then I'm going to drive up to Fort Hood.
Oh.
I'll visit some veterans and soldiers up at Fort Hood.
Okay, are you doing any events in Houston?
We had some feelers out there. We hadn't knocked anything in yet, but I'll be in the vicinity for about 5 days. I still have an opportunity, but it just nothing solidified in Houston yet.
Okay, so if there's anybody listening to us, and we have a lot of people from right here at the Medical Center area and downtown Houston right here where I'm located at, here's my home, that you want to have Saeed Mustafa come in and talk or share or just talk about the book, Resiliency, Stress, Anxiety. And let's just start off, and Curtis, jump in and tell me to shut up, Dad, whenever you want to. Tell me, why did you write this book, and why was this the topic that you thought should be written? And is it just for veterans, or is it for anybody?
Very good question. So the short answer is for everyone. Because as you know, as a doctor, you know that everyone experiences some sort of stress or maybe even anxiety in their lives. But certainly we all have periods of transition. And in the Army, one of the things I learned as a leader is that we're most vulnerable during periods of transition. So, for example, during the first Gulf War, where we went from combat operations to transition into recovery operations after the war was over, I noticed that a lot of my soldiers started to have vehicle accidents. So the question then, how do we go through the war without these accidents? And then it's the war's over, we're having these accidents. It's because of complacency. It's because we start letting our guard down. We're so anxious about getting back home, and we take our eye off the ball. And so there's an example of how this word that we use called transition can put one at risk. So now, how does that apply out here in veteran land? Well, after I retired, a couple of things happened. You may have read, if you read the whole book, then you read about a story of one of my good friends who retired and then ultimately succumbed to suicide after serving the Army 26 years, retiring as a master sergeant, first sergeant, went home, and he and I were very close. And he and I pledged to stay in touch with one another. And unfortunately, I just say that I didn't live up to that pledge because I got busy with the Army and got my attention so distracted that I didn't call my friend to see how he was doing. So that plagued me for a while, right? What could I have done? And then I couldn't figure out how this man in particular, he's so strong, he's so athletic, he's so well-liked, how could he fall to this demise? It was just baffling, right? I can't believe it. Until I went through that process, until I sat home on the couch for a while and contemplated what's next for my life. Now, I didn't get suicidal personally, but I did get extremely depressed and down. And I thought to myself, I've lived my best life already. I've had 30 years in the Army. I've reached the highest pinnacles of leadership. I guess there's nothing else to do but to wait to die. you know, until my mother invited me to the senior citizens meetings here in Hopper Falls, New York. And I go into this room of all these people that are 60, 70, 80 years old, some even 90, and they're vibrant and they're full of life and they're planning their trip to the casino. And I looked around the room, I said, wait a minute, I'm still young. If these folks are this energetic about life, if these folks still have purpose, I just have to find what that is for me.
Yeah.
And that's the genesis of the beginning of this understanding that you have to be resilient. You have to have the capability of bouncing back.
Yeah. Yeah. Curtis, you got a thought? You deal with this with friends going in and out of the Army too?
Definitely. Is as he said, that key word is transition. And the military, as of now, has very good programs to set people up for success afterwards, because doing something where you're told how to do it, when to do it, where to do it 24/7 for 20, 30 years, then getting out and having that, I don't want to say dependency, but it's complacency. Use that word, it's that complacency, and you don't know what to do anymore. So luckily we have these programs that teach soldiers how to be regular again. That's a tough word to say, but it's true. Military soldiers are a different breed of people, and we don't know how to be civilians, going from soldier to civilian. So I'm thankful that the military has great programs in place now to kind of help us transition. So very good point, sir.
Yeah, I like what Curtis just said. He reminded me of the fact that we are in an institution, and it's a pretty powerful one. You know, so you get indoctrinated. When I was in advanced individual training as a first sergeant, we learned this terminology called the soldierization process. So we're taking these young people, and when they go to basic training and they come to AIT, which is advanced individual training, they're going through the soldierization process. So that's 6 weeks of basic, that's another 6 weeks of AIT, and then for whatever long they stay in the military. And what that process is, essentially, we're turning you from a civilian into a soldier. We're teaching you values that you may not have had when you were outside. Honor, duty, respect, self-service, personal courage. You know, the 7 Army values that we have, and now you have to embrace these to be a soldier. You have to embrace the warrior ethos. So if there's a process to go through when you come in, what's the process to go through when you go out?
Exactly.
Contemplate on this thing.
Exactly.
And although Curtis is right, we do have what's called the TAP, Transition Assistance Program, which I end up working at West Point as a lead counselor for the soldier, at the time, Soldier for Life Transition Assistance Program. There, I was responsible for counseling soldiers from the rank of private all the way up to colonel on their transition out of the military. I helped them with their resumes. I helped them with their interviewing skills. I put together job fairs. But then I started to still contemplate on, is that enough? Because one thing I noticed that was common from private to colonel was a little bit of anxiety about what's happening on the other side of the fence. It's unknown.
Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, tell you what, we're going to take our first break. Give us a chance to kind of to regather up and everything. And after the first break, Sergeant Major, I would love to be able to go into detail about how, because here I was reading this book about, you know, real men, real activity, real combat, and then all of a sudden you slipped in music. Like, what? Now, you know, I have my piano right here, but I mean, it's like music. I know how important it is, but as when we come back after this first break, I really want to find out, how did you discover that that could be a key to be able to handle and maintain and monitor anxiety and stress in a person's life? And I'm really interested in hearing your response and talking to you about that. And we'll do that. If you want to get involved, 888-627-6008. And the wonderful people of BBS Radio will answer the phone and patch you right through to Sergeant Major Mustafa and Staff Sergeant Curtis Williams, our guest on the show tonight. We'll be right back after this first break. Hang with us. finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. All righty, welcome back. If you're watching football, that is A-OK. You can have your computer screen just like this, and you can have the football game right up there. You don't need to listen to all that stuff. You just kind of watch it out of the corner of your eye, because this is important stuff tonight. Not that football, but every year football is going to happen. We probably already know who's going to win anyway, but it's been a good weekend of football. I tell you what, when you come to Houston, have you ever visited the Buffalo Soldiers Museum here in Houston?
No, I have not, actually.
It is right. I can see it outside my window almost. It's just a few blocks down the road.
Really?
And it's worth your trip, because I know you're very interested in that and very involved. And you know, to be honest with you, I think when you first get in town, I would go there and say, hey, here I am. Here's my involvement. Let me meet some people, and maybe they'll do an event for you right here next week there.
No, you're absolutely right. I may just do that on Wednesday. I take an early flight out of New York City and get into Houston probably around 10:30, 11. And I think I still have time that day on Wednesday, the 26th, to visit them. So thank you for that recommendation.
It's really an interesting trip through that museum. Very, very inspirational. And it's information that we don't hear in school, at least when I was growing up. So it was really good. Tell me how important, when you're dealing with anxiety and stress, that you discovered and how you discovered that music played a part in that.
Okay, so my discovery process was very interesting. So it really goes back to, so in Germany, while I was transitioning from my last duty station, knowing I'm about to come back to New York, I set up an LLC called S4L Entertainment and Sports Management LLC. The S4L stands for Soldier for Life.
Hmm.
So the reason I did that is because I was involved as a senior non-commissioned officer in the morale and welfare of the soldiers. So I put on boxing matches, we'd have DJs, we'd have live bands. I've always been a lover of music. I wish I could play music like yourself. I just never got there. However, it ain't too late. So then going forward, I got home, and that first year I retired, did my ceremony at West Point. I took an entire year off, and I just was rediscovering New York. And I would go to these various venues that had live music. NYC had a place called the Ashford and Simpson Sugar Bar down in Manhattan. Now, you should be old enough to know who Ashford and Nick Ashford and Valerie Simpson. They're Grammy Award winners.
Yes.
So I'm in that place where these stars literally have been and are, because Nick is now passed, rest in peace, his wife Valerie is still alive. So I met her. Then I would be in places like the Falcon here in the Hudson Valley that had some incredible artists coming from all over. Beacon, New York, just everywhere. So that was my sort of mode of relaxation. But it didn't dawn on me that this is really a therapeutic thing. I just know that it helped me decompress to get away from people and be in that type of space. But then one day I go to the VA hospital, Montrose, New York. And amongst other things that I was offered, I see on the menu of things that I could choose to help me with stress is music therapy, art therapy, yoga, Reiki, which I had never heard of that before. I didn't know what that was. But it was all these type of alternative medicines. So my counselor asked me, would you like to try these things? I said, I'll give it a shot. Why not? And so when I started to explore these options that were present right there at the VA, I had to ask myself, how come I didn't know about this before? And so I decided that if I didn't know about it, it's probably likely that other veterans don't know about it. And so I delved in it a little deeper, and then I went on a quest to start to communicate to others that these things are available to you. For 5 years, I put on an event that I planned, resourced, promoted, and executed called the Veterans Resiliency All-White Affair, which means everybody wear white clothing as a representation for those veterans we've lost, and awards gala. I created an award called the Resiliency Award, and I would give out 15 awards every year. I did this for 5 consecutive years. People came from all over the country, San Antonio, Cleveland, Miami, D.C. 2 people came in 2019 from Germany. So this thing was growing each year. Then we got halted by the pandemic. But the whole premise of that was I had a term in the Army, trick them into training. And so therefore, you make something fun, you make something excited, and the people don't even realize they're learning something. So I'm bringing people in to talk about a serious message of veterans suicide awareness and prevention. But I'm making them dress up, listen to nice music, eat good food, dance, and then I give out this a resiliency award, and we talk about why this is so important. And then essentially we charge the folks that got the award to go out to their communities and find other veterans. So the next year, they nominate the person who's going to get awarded. And it just started taking on a life of its own. So
that's great.
I believe then and now that music certainly is a viable option to reduce stress and anxiety.
Well, there's no doubt about it. And Curtis, I think probably one of the best things I ever had done as a father was introduce you to Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., some type of music. And that's, I live on that music. And I noticed the first song on your list in the back is What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, matter of fact, I think I have it right. Yeah, I have it right here in my piano bench. I sing and play this all the time. And there's something about it. So, Curtis, from your perspective after hearing this, how much music helps you to sometimes come home after one of those days to decompress?
Major. It's major. Anytime I drive into work, out of work, I have to have some kind of music on, depending on how the day was. If it was a good day, you know, I'll throw on some Frank Sinatra, some hippie stuff. If it's a bad day, I'll put on some more classics, just have a little bit different mood. But music plays such a vital role in my life. There's literally a song for any kind of mood. Any kind of day you have, you can find something to soothe your soul. Absolutely. So I love that.
Absolutely. So I think the book is just telling folks to be intentional about that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And, you know, there's literally songs that if they come on the radio and I'm listening to, like, satellite radio, and it comes on and I don't know what's coming, I literally have to pull off to the side of the road and just take it in. I can't drive and listen to it at the same time. There's so much emotion crammed in that song that it just absolutely is overwhelming. And I love how music helps with that.
That's right.
A serious, very serious, not that that wasn't. What kind of, as we turn a corner here, with people coming out of the military, and I know you both have strong views on this, and you talked about suicide, what kind of awareness have you been working with, Sergeant Major, and prevention of watching our veterans and even those that are in the military now? And could there be something that's happening in the military that is adding to, besides just combat, to some of those thoughts after they get out?
Yeah, I'll take that one first.
Okay.
My last tour in Iraq was 2011. I was in, so during Operation Iraqi Freedom, the first time I was there was 2009-10. We got there May of 2009. And I want to say between May and June, myself and my commander were sitting in the DPAC having lunch. And all of a sudden, some subordinate leader comes and whispers in our ear, we just had a suicide in the, what they call the CHU. You know, that's a trailer, essentially, which is the housing areas for the troops. So, of course, we drop our meals and jump up and run to the direction of this supposedly soldier of ours. And we get in there, and it's a crowd of people around, and make our way to the front. And we're trying to identify this particular soldier. And lo and behold, it was a soldier that had committed suicide, but it just wasn't our soldier. It was the STB. I was part of the 123rd BSB, and somebody got the information wrong. It was a soldier in the STB. Nevertheless, this is somebody's child. He was 20, 21 years old. He's gone. So you ask yourself, why? Now, we hadn't been in country 30 days, so it couldn't have been the war that stressed him out that bad. I don't believe, because he hadn't really experienced that yet. He hadn't even really got into it yet. All of a sudden, boom, he's gone. Well, when you peel back the onion, I think that in his case, this young soldier was experiencing some breakup with a significant other, a girlfriend or something that took him over the top. So there's just one example of how there's some things that could make somebody so emotional that they think there's no reason to live. Now, what that did, though, for me as a leader, I said to myself at that moment, that could have been my soldier. And if it would have been my soldier, I would have been devastated as a leader.
Yeah. So, Chris, I know you have thoughts.
So now I have to figure out, how do I prevent that from my unit?
Yeah.
So for 12 months that we were in theater, I worked every single day to prevent that from happening. Fortunately for us, we did not have suicide. We did not even have an attempt in our unit. Now, some of the things I employed were battle buddies, meaning we match soldiers up as teammates, and they have to be together essentially at all times. And we do other things, like keep the chaplain engaged to give us an assessment on the pulse of the organization. We do other things like training, believe it or not. Good old-fashioned hard training, making sure they're prepared to do the job that the American people pay them to do.
Right.
And then the third thing is, I personally as a leader thought it wasn't wise in that environment to give people a lot of time off, meaning you just come back and lay around and worry about what's happening back in the United States.
Right.
So we kept them really busy all the way up till Sunday, where Sunday morning I get everybody up and we go do organized competitive sports from unit to unit to unit. At the end of the half of day, when that was over, I would give out awards to the winners and give out special awards to people who were the heroes of the week. And then I would give them the rest of the day off. Now it's about 12. They get about from 12 to 5 to figure out how to go wash some clothes, go hang out with their friend, whatever. But by the time 5 or 6 or 7 comes, it's time to get ready for the next day.
Right.
It worked for me. it worked for me. And that 12 months was a very, very, we got the Army Safety Award. Yep. Came all the way from Fort McClellan, Alabama to give our unit the Army Safety Award.
Wow.
We not only didn't have suicides, we didn't have sexual assaults in the unit. We didn't have rollovers. It's discipline.
Right, right. Curtis, I know you have several thoughts on this.
So I'm gonna kind of navigate a little bit around what you said. I want your honest opinion here because, I mean, I've dealt with suicide a lot in my career. I've been in for 11 years, and I've dealt with it from somebody I joined with at a PV2 level on himself, committed suicide, all the way up to one of my former major generals. I don't know if you remember Major General Rossi.
Yes.
But he was one. He was one of the, yeah. So he committed suicide, and he was a 2-star general.
That's right.
So we're going from the lowest ranking to one of the highest ranking. It is not, wow. And it's so filled in between. That so was, in, sorry. And since we're in a time of peace now, what do we do back at home? Because we have gone up, if I got the numbers right, we've been up 28.7% in the last 3 years alone, 48% in the last 5 years.
With suicide,
we have gone up in just the last couple of years. So in a time of peace, what is your recommendation to help prevent this?
So the first example I gave you was how I've dealt with that in the combat operations. Second example I'm going to give you is I was a first sergeant in an AIT unit. Again, we talk about this process of going from being a civilian to being a soldier. For the person going through that, it's stressful. You're turning their life inside out. They used to be able to do what they want to do. Now they're under total control from their sergeant, their drill sergeant, whoever. We tell them what time to wake up. We tell them what time to eat, what time to go to sleep. Stressful. We learned in that environment something called assist. Did you guys have that?
We still have assist, yes, sir.
Okay, so applied suicide intervention training.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, that was very, I took the notes, I took the class, I paid attention, and then I applied those skill sets very, very strategically inside my organization. I told the drill sergeant, we had like a triage process. It teaches you essentially, that training teaches you how to do a risk assessment on a human being.
Mm-hmm.
How to determine if they're a high risk for suicide, a low risk, or a medium risk.
Mm-hmm.
If we determine that a person is a low risk, then it may mean that they get to stay in their unit and then we bring the chaplain in to talk to them or something, or maybe the drill sergeant talks to them. If they're medium risk, maybe they come talk to me. If they're a high risk, we're taking them to the hospital. But the question is, how do you get to the point that you can make that determination? There's some specific things that you're looking for. First of all, you're asking directly.
Yes.
You have feelings.
And that, I'm glad you said that because me and my dad were talking about before the show started was what can we do for his book? And that's the biggest thing. It's just asking. We're in an era and age where we're afraid to ask somebody straight up, do you want to kill yourself?
That's right.
And there's nothing wrong with that. And that has been one of the biggest things in the military as a whole today still. Is we think we're weak if we say we need help. And I'm glad that I'm talking Command Sergeant Major because you had the power to negate all that. Whenever you have leaders and roles and stuff like that, and now there's still some leaders today, sadly, still think, oh, well, you need to see a therapist. Well, I don't want you anymore. Go be somebody else's problem. And that is the biggest thing the military still needs to fix. Is if you need help, ask.
Think about some of the skill sets that are lauded or applauded, warrior skills. For example, if you're at Fort Bragg, North Carolina, you want to be a platoon sergeant, you want to be a first sergeant, you got to go to jump master school. They want you to be a jump master, okay, because they have soldiers that come out of the sky and fight. And that's important to them. If you want to go be a leader at Fort Campbell, Kentucky, you got to go to Airsoft School. Right? So if you want to be a leader in the medical field, they want you to have the EFMB. So all these organizations or these fields, these military specialties have some sort of special skills they expect you to have. Mm-hmm. Well, the approach I took, using that as a template, as a sustainment sergeant major, deal with logistics. I said, if you want to be a leader in my unit, you got to know how to do assist training.
Yes, sir.
You got to know how to look for the signs of suicide and try to mitigate them.
Yes, sir. You have to
know about how to prevent sexual assault.
Yes, sir.
I made these things a fire.
Yeah. Tell you what, we're going to take that. We're going to stop right there. We're taking our last break. On the other side of this, you said the couple words twice now. On the other side of this commercial, I want to talk about sexual assault. And is that a hidden skeleton in the closet of the military right now that's just not being discovered, but it's not being discussed? And I want to find out if that is a major problem or is it just the way people are talking on the streets about it. But I want to kind of touch on that real briefly on the other side of this last break. 888-627-6008. Or you can hop right online on Facebook and Curtis will be right there to help you with any comments there. We'll be right back after this last break.
HCI Publishing that brought you the international bestsellers A Child Called It and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. I appreciate you being here. We have with us tonight Sergeant Major Mustafa, the author of Resilient Transition, and our special co-host tonight, my son Curtis Williams in Seattle. And we're talking about not only the book and music and anxiety and stress, but a major issue, at least in our world. And I have a feeling it could be a hidden issue in the military. Curtis, you're active now. Do you have any thoughts about, and have you not, I'm not asking you if you've witnessed it, but have you known people that have been affected by that? Is it an issue in our military with sexual assault?
It is 100% one of, if not the biggest issue military still has, sadly. And I think I've talked about that on the show a few times, and I don't shy away from it. The military still has a problem with it. And I've known people that have experienced it. And even with my job, you know, as a recruiter a couple of years ago in Houston, we had Vanessa Guillon. And that is a name that will never be forgotten for the rest of the military's life, is Vanessa Guillon. You, Sergeant Major, you said you're about to go to Fort Hood. You are going to know that name quite well, and you're going to probably go through her gate still when you get there.
Sadly, Curtis, I know it very well. Mm-hmm. Although I haven't met her or her family, I tracked that case. Mm-hmm. It's kind of one of the reasons I selected Fort Hood.
That place needs it. That whole military felt that. I think the whole universe felt that. And luckily now, and I don't know all the details, I know it's still in the works, but now there's finally a place, there's a new law in place to help bring soldiers that do stuff like this to justice. because sadly in the previous years, it's been, I love the military, but it's a buddy-buddy program. If you do something bad, if you know a high-ranking up person, you're kind of wash hands of it. But now the civilian world is finally stepping inside and saying, we are done with this. So the civilian side of the world is now taking on the cases of sexual harassment and sexual abuse in the military, and everybody's being held accountable.
And yeah, that what is, about the victims? What kind of help do either one of you are aware of that is provided for the victims? Is it substantial?
Right, Sergeant Major, I'll let you take that one.
Yeah, I think it's like anything else, Doctor, is that some organizations get it right and some don't. There's a standard for sure that certain things are supposed to happen in the instance that there is a case like that. You're supposed to take certain actions. Yeah. Does it happen all the time? I say no.
No.
But like I told you, what I would do is in my unit, it's like Curtis said, it starts at the top. What is the priorities of the organization? Do we say that this is something important enough for the sergeant major to go out there and talk to the first sergeant about and have the platoon sergeants and the squad leaders and down to the soldiers? Because you had a different, many components to this. So in the theater, I wasn't worried necessarily that soldiers were going to attack other soldiers, although that could be the case. In theater, I was worried about because we got other people from other countries on the compounds that we are serving at. They had instances where a young female soldier could go to the shower at night after she got off her shift and be assaulted in the women's shower because there was some male hiding in the shower. That's the reason I employed battle buddies everywhere at all times, to include the bathroom. So that seemed a little draconian at the time, and they didn't necessarily like it, but I thought this was the best way to protect my soldiers. So that's just an example. Now, as it pertains to what's going on here in Garrison, back here in the United States, it's a leadership issue, period. In my opinion, it's a leadership issue. You know, you have to really, really, really get down into talking to soldiers to find out what's going on. In that young lady's case, rest in peace, there was some layers to that, that there was allegedly some leader that was harassing that soldier. Now, that maybe wasn't the person that ultimately caused her demise. It was supposedly this E4 that took his own life. But it just tells me that there was a breakdown in leadership to the point that leaders were trying to date soldiers.
Yep.
Versus lead them. Now, that's so important to me for various reasons. You know, my first squad leader in the Army was a woman. Staff Sergeant Susan Lawrence, I'll never forget her. So she set the tone for me having a great career because that woman would knock on my door every morning and get up, I mean, without fail. Now, I used to hate it when she did it, but she was consistent. And she was consistent in training and consistent in applying discipline. So I never forgot her. Secondly, I have a daughter in the Army right now. She's at Fort Huachuca. She's in the Army Reserves, actually. She's a federal correction officer, but she's changing her military specialty from military police to MI.
She's
at Fort Huachuca, Arizona right now. And again, I would just hope that whoever is in charge of her is making sure she's okay. I have a young daughter who's 21 years old that tells me that on Thanksgiving, she's interested in going into the Air Force. Now, this young daughter is a little quieter than the other one and a little bit timid. So I worry about that. You know, so it's an issue that's near and dear to my heart. And while when I served in the military, I did two things that I thought helped us succeed in 2009 campaign in Iraq. Before we left, I did something called a women's symposium. Mm-hmm. What that was is I brought all my female warriors in and we had a conference for them. And we would break down in various groups to talk about issues specific to women soldiers that may not necessarily affect a male soldier. Something that we wanted them to be able to talk about in the open and honestly without any retribution, And I brought in General Gwynne Bingham, who at the time was the quartermaster general. And she was the keynote speaker, and she led the soldiers in a 2-3 mile run. And at the end of that, what I found is they were so motivated by that experience that we got about a good 6 months of traction when we got to Iraq. Then I did that thing again in theater. I had another symposium over there in Iraq, brought them all in, talked to them, said, what's going on? Tell me, let me hear about what issues you may be having. I'm getting a sense of the climate, doctor. And these two things were very, very effective for me to reduce the threat of sexual assault and any other issues that were specific to my female warriors.
Yeah, unfortunately, I believe it's rampant everywhere. And I do think the military is kind of hidden off and covered up more than what, you know, the public entities are. We just don't hear much about it. But I know there's an issue and we need to be aware of it. And I appreciate you, both of your input on that. We only have a minute or two before we have to go. And I wanted to ask you this question, Sergeant Major. In your opinion, since it's part of your title of your book, what does resilient or resiliency mean to you? For instance, if I've gone through something, you know, we always say kids are resilient, don't worry about them. You know, well, baloney, they have it in them. But what does that word mean to you, and how important is that right now with what we're going through as a country and as a world with all the different things of strife hitting us from every angle, from what I call the perfect storm of stress? What's resiliency mean?
Yes, question, doctor. Resiliency to me means this: the ability to bounce back from any form of adversity or trauma, even, versus the inclination to let that adversity or trauma break you. So bounce back like a ball versus break like an egg.
So good analogy.
The whole premise of my resiliency gala was not just to have a big party. It was to show and demonstrate to people what does resiliency look like. So we didn't select soldiers to give the award to who were perfect or veterans. We selected people who had come back from something. You know, and that's okay if you got knocked down. We just want you to get back up. And so in your case, I think you demonstrate, in my opinion, the little that I know about you, an epitome of resilience. You have had trauma in your life by virtue of your father. But somehow, despite that, you were having the ability to go and become a doctor, and it appears to live a pretty successful life. Now, does that mean you're perfect? Probably not. It probably means that you continue to work on being better.
Yeah.
That's what I think resiliency is.
Yeah, you know, we all have, they're giving me the countdown here, but real quick, does each person, this is kind of a trick question, but I just want to see how you answer. Does each person, can they learn resiliency, or do they discover resiliency in themselves?
I think both. I think that some may have the maturity and wherewithal to discover it, but there's others that can be taught it. And that's where I think we can do better at. We can get those ability to go out and employ tactics to teach them.
Yeah, I believe that everybody has it in them. Mm-hmm. They just have to find out where it's at and to discover that. And your book is definitely one that's going to lead them to that, and your work. And boy, we need it right now in our country, on our streets. We just had a police officer shot last night here, right down the road from where I'm at. And it's happening everywhere. And I know Seattle, Curtis, it's happening there. I know New York, it is happening there. Chicago, everywhere. Resilient Transition is a book that I recommend everybody. If you would, put that back up on the screen so we can see it right in front of you on your chest there. So, and if they want to get this, what's the best way for them to get this? And then how do they get in touch with you and your work? We only have about 30 seconds.
Best way is to go on Amazon, You can go on Amazon right now, get this book. You can read it, ebook, for free, actually, if you got Amazon Prime. And then you can download it for $4.99. And if you want to get to me directly, my email is Saeed, S-A-E-E-D, Mustafa, M-U-S-T-A-F-A, the number 64 at gmail.com. And then we can arrange for you to have a signed copy if you'd like.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you for being here. Curtis, do you have any last thoughts?
I just want to thank you for your time, Command Sergeant Major, and it was an honor to meet you, sir. Thank you for being on the show tonight.
Thank you, and thank you for your service, and thank you, Pat, for what he's doing for all those people who are hurting in the world.
Thanks, sir.
I'll tell you what, when you get in Houston, at least when you drive by me here on Holcomb or down at the Medical Center, toot your horn and make sure you get to the Buffalo Soldier Museum, because I know you'll enjoy that. And who knows, if you have an event here, I will be there to meet you and get to shake your hand. And I appreciate you taking the time to share your story with us tonight. And hopefully a lot of people will be picking that book up tonight. Go ahead and buy it, and you can start reading it before you go to bed this evening. Thank you for being with us tonight, sir.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. As we do each and every week, I always want to let you know, no matter what you've gone through, whether it's being on the combat war zone in another country, or it's being having been sexually assaulted, at a school or on a date rape, or if it's being just betrayed by somebody that you really trusted and knew that they would be your best friend for life and they're gone. No matter what you're going through right now, what you've gone through in the past, or what you're going to deal with tomorrow, I think we found out tonight from my son and from Sergeant Major, the author of this tremendous book, that there's always hope. There's always a chance in you to go another day, dig deep, and don't give up. You have it in you to make it through it. On behalf of Curtis, as a co-host tonight, son, I love you dearly. Thank you for being with us tonight. And Sergeant Major, thank you so much for being here. And for both of you, it is an honor to know each of you. And thank you for your service. And our country is a better place and a freer place because of your service. Thank you. Join us right here next week for another edition from the most beautiful city in the world, Houston, Texas, of Breaking the Silence. God bless you and have an awesome, awesome week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.